So, hi, it's Graham here. Sorry to interrupt your podcast listening like this, but I wondered if you could do us a little favour. I haven't told Carole I'm going to do this, and frankly, I'm not sure she's going to find out. Let's maybe keep it that way, shall we? I don't think she listens to the podcast, so she won't hear that I've tacked this onto the beginning. But the European Security Blogger Awards, they're about to happen, and Smashing Security has been nominated in a couple of categories. Huzzah, huzzah! You can vote in the awards for your favourite security blogs and security podcasts, hint, hint. But you've only got a few days before the voting closes, so do it today. Do it now. Hit pause. Oh, not before I've told you the URL. It's smashingsecurity.com/vote. That will redirect you through magic to the voting form. And, well, hey, may the best podcast co-hosted for the last 6 or so years by a Brit and a Canadian win. Yeah, over to you. Smashingsecurity.com/vote. Thank you very much. We love you all, at least the people who vote for us. But for now, back to your normal service. And sorry about this interruption.
Smashing Security, Episode 002. Invest in Carrier Pigeons. With Carol Terrio, Vanya Schweitzer and Graham Cluley.
Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 2 of Smashing Security. Carol, what are you smirking at that point? I'm trying to be upbeat. You said
it's only because it's smashing.
You'll see, guys, Graham is standing up, right? And Graham does a lot of stage presenting. So that's what's going on here. He's presenting. Let's go. Let's do this.
You said make it dynamic this time.
I don't think I've ever said that.
Put in lots of, because we want to be finished within about 20 minutes. Do you think we're going to do it? Do you think we're going to do it in 20 minutes?
20 minutes. Let's go.
All right. Okay. Yeah, episode 2 is 5th of January 2017. And we have brought, each of us has brought to the table a story that we've uncovered from the world of computer security this week. We don't reveal to each other what the story is until we actually meet here, right now, in the chat. So we can now see it.
He's lying. He's totally lying. I don't know why he's lying, but I want authenticity. I want transparency. Graham is lying. Okay, carry on.
Story number uno. Number one is friend of the show, Donald Trump. He's between jobs at the moment, so he wasn't able to make it onto the podcast today. But he has been talking about computer security. And in fact, on New Year's Eve, he was accosted by one of those evil journalist types who asked him, so what's all this about the hacking and Russians hacking into America and into the Democratic Party and all these kind of things? And Donald is not shy of an opinion. And he said some surprising things. He said that no computer is safe and that it's very hard to prove that a hack is linked to a particular country, he said.
So he'd been well advised by his advisors, it seems.
Well, I completely agree. I mean, that was the surprising thing. I thought, actually, you know what? You're right. What computers are safe in this day and age from internet attack and from hackers and from malware? There's the old joke of don't plug in your computer and then you're pretty safe, you know?
Are you saying then that you don't believe the CIA is right and it's pointing the finger at Russia?
Oh, well, that's different. Okay, so I do think it's probable that the Russians were behind the hack, which hit the Democratic Party. I think there's a number of reasons to believe that that's the most likely. However, proving it 100% is extraordinarily difficult. What we do know is that they were effectively hacked via a phishing attack. That was the primary method. That gave them access to the email archive. But this is the other thing. How do you keep the information safe? Well, the journalists asked Donald Trump that as well. And this is what he said. He said, you want something to really go without detection, write it out and have it sent by courier. He didn't say carrier pigeon, although that presumably is an option as well. But what he's saying is, you want to keep a secret, don't put it on a computer. And yeah, that is going to stop it from being hacked.
As you know, carrier pigeons were successfully used in the Second World War by the British intelligence.
That's right.
Yes, they were.
Of course, the couriers a few thousand years ago, even in the recent wars they were used, but whether they're safe, that's a different question. It depends on the cipher you're using.
Right, exactly. If you're using a Caesar cipher or a ROT 13 or something like that, that is not going to be as secure as using OpenPGP or GPG to securely encrypt your messages and have some certainty as to who can open it, who can unlock it and decrypt it. But even then, if you send an encrypted message, if the endpoint, if the other computer you're communicating with is compromised in some fashion, a hacker could still see the message, right?
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's the most of the recent Trojans and recent attacks have installed Trojans, which would actually allow remote attacker to exactly see what you're doing and record all this data and exfiltrate.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's sort of par for the course these days for hackers. When they infect your computer, their malware is not only going to be able to access any file on your hard drive, but it has the ability to take over your webcam, to log what's happening on your screen, take remote control of your keyboard, grab your keystrokes, and all kinds of other shenanigans as well.
Do you not think, though, sorry, I know we ought to move on, but don't you think, though, that social engineering is playing a much bigger part in malware than it used to? So we're much more reliant now on things like phishing emails or, you know, social engineering attacks where you're trying to dupe someone into providing you an access point to get in, to get the information you need to hold it for ransom or for whatever your end game is.
I think the truth is that the weakness is where it always was. You know, thousands of years ago, the weakness was primarily a human one, yeah? It was either going to be someone who was corrupt, who you gave your message to, who you trusted to transport it across the plains of, you know, wherever to get to the end point, or there was someone at the other end who dressed up as the king and said, hey, man, I'm the king, why don't you give me the message so that I can read it? That wasn't meant to be an Elvis impression, by the way.
I love how you started bouncing around the room. He started bouncing when he was the king. There's obviously a secret.
Graham is the king.
Graham wants to be the king so bad.
Why not? But, you know, that those sort of threats, I mean, I think that the surprising thing is that some of these attacks can be perpetrated by 14-year-olds. They don't need enormous sophistication because just the simple attacks like phishing really work, and they are going to carry on working for hundreds and hundreds of years because it ultimately is exploiting a weakness in people. And that's what happened at the Democratic Party.
So what we're saying then,
the software itself is becoming more secure as we go, and as like some of the remote code execution vulnerabilities in browsers, in internet browsers, are not completely removed, but they are certainly a smaller number of new vulnerabilities discovered.
So what we're saying basically is use encryption where possible. We're saying only put emails. Make sure what you put in emails and what you click online is not dodgy or wrong or going to lead you down a bad path. And
invest in carrier pigeons.
Yeah.
Hey.
Something like that.
Cool.
But in summary, with this particular story, and there's been some absurd stories in the press and there's been some poor communication and all sorts of things like this. My personal belief is, do I think it was the Russians? Yeah, I probably do. I think they had the motivation and they were attacking other military and government officials. And so I suspect it wasn't a 14-year-old who was behind that particular attack. I think that's likely. But proving it 100%, really, really difficult. Attributing an attack, confirming it's even state-sponsored, let alone which state might have done it, really, really hard.
Yeah, it's very hard. I often think of how of this, one of those, like some of the best companies that work with the government actually are able to attribute some of the attacks. And I think the answer is looking at these sort of historical campaigns over the years. What kind of malware are they using? What sort of infrastructure, command and control server, encryption algorithms, encryption key, everything that's repeated, you can attribute to an actor A. So how do you now jump from, you know, this is an actor A to this is a Russian intelligence is a different question. So I wonder whether the kind of American intelligence services are not telling us everything.
Well, and they may have information which they don't feel comfortable sharing. For instance, they may have people on the inside in other countries who are feeding back information which they cannot.
Exactly. So they don't want to compromise your kind of sources.
They're stuck behind a rock and a hard place, basically. And
It's kind of weird to watch President-elect and CIA basically not trust each other publicly in the media. Like, it's kind of eek.
you bet that's going to change. pretty quickly.
Oh yeah, they're going to completely trust and rely on each other. I think we're going to enter a state of utter normality in the Trump presidency. So make the most of it while you can, Carole.
Okay, because great.
Things are going to dramatically calm down, and everything's going to be wonderful. don't worry about that. So let's move on. Vanya, what have you got?
Okay, the second story for today is quite related to what Graham was talking about, and it's about the same group of actors that computer security company CrowdStrike is calling APT28, and the new piece of malware that's been discovered on Android phones in Ukraine. So the different same attackers, different target of the attack, and allegedly there was a software that was used by the Ukrainian D-30 howitzer units to calculate the elevation or the angle of how well they should target. And it was actually infiltrated by the same actor who included the code that was among the other things from the phone, such as the model of the phone, the type of the phone, the phone number, and so on, send the kind of coordinates of the nearest cell tower that the phone was connecting to.
So, what's D-30 howitzer? What is that?
Well, it was actually quite popular in the old Soviet times. It's a 122 millimeter artillery weapon.
And oh, so it's for the army. It's for the army.
Yeah. So the howitzer are, well, cannons. I don't know how we call them.
he's pretending not to know.
Well, they have been used in some previous conflicts in my parts of the world as well. Mm-hmm. And they were like one of the biggest weapons that was used by the former Yugoslav army. So
I love how we always get a history lesson from you, Vanya. I think this should be I think we need one every week. I love it.
So what we've got here are soldiers in the Ukraine, or in Ukraine, who are downloading this app in order to help them work out what elevation to have their artillery or something in order to shoot off missiles.
Yeah, so from like the minutes to actually you have to set up your howitzer to shoot, it will bring the time of targeting to like seconds. And the original application was developed by one of the officers in Ukrainian army.
Okay.
And allegedly distributed on Ukrainian military-related forums, which to me it sounds a bit
you're assuming those are open forums. They could be closed forums, right? I mean,
well, but how do you know if somebody who's a member of the forum, you can always pretend to be the author of the app, which is what allegedly has happened, and that app was downloaded 9,000 times. The legitimate one, and we don't know how many people use the illegitimate or Trojanous version of the app.
We think this malicious Android app, which helps the army fire their cannons and things like this, was leaking information about the location of these weapons, potentially?
It seems, and if you read the report which was released by CrowdStrike, you could see that they claimed that about 50% of all the army units that had these howitzers were, how they called? They had loss of them. So
they were using the app.
The lines, we don't know whether they were using an app or not, but read between the lines, it was implied that if you're using the app, you'll be easily discovered easier by the opponent forces. And,
God, do you think some people are getting a big talking down to right now? I bet on this, eh?
If you think about the whole kind of a topic of operational security, that was a big fail on Ukrainian side. If it's true that the Russians have managed to infiltrate their app in that sort of way.
So, Vanya, as our man in Eastern Europe, do you have any thoughts as to who possibly might be interested in monitoring the location of Ukrainian armaments? I mean, who'd want to do such a thing?
I think it's pretty obvious that what people are saying is that the Russians may be behind it.
What?
However, the guys from the crisis research lab in Hungarian research lab have actually discovered a couple of interesting strings in malware. One of them is I think it's a variable name, or at least value of the variable that has German words for nothing, nichts, as a default value. And then there's another misspell of phone standard with a T at the end, which, you know, is it kind of Russian spelling? Is it German? You know, it's difficult to say. So once again, we come to the point that attributing attacks to like a particular actor is not an easy thing to do.
Not an easy thing at all. Oh, pretty heavy stuff. Kroll, what have you got up with your yellow sleeve today for us?
Oh, I've got something much more fun and light, so we can end on a cheery note. So I've actually put a title to my topic, so note to you two. So mine's called, well, we've come a long way from tinfoil hats. And this is all about, as digital surveillance increases, a lot of us think about privacy. And there's this project called Hyperface, and this guy, Adam Harvey, he's an artist and independent researcher based in Berlin, is handling it slightly differently than others by trying to design things like clothing that basically fools photo recognition software. So imagine a coat that's made of a fabric with a pattern, and the pattern basically has faces on it that would be detected by face recognition software.
So you said faces, did you?
Faces. So imagine... Oh,
okay. Yeah, something like this, you know?
Were you making a very rude joke? You have a child, don't you? A five-year-old?
Yeah, okay. Hence there's a lot of potty talk.
So the whole idea is it kind of confuses it. So you'd wear this out if you didn't want people to take pictures of you and being able and having the camera being able to kind of say, oh, that is definitely Graham Cluley. And I'm going to tag that with his, you know, with his social media pictures and find him everywhere on the web is the idea. Now, kind of cool, ridiculous. What are you guys thinking?
Well, it reminds me of something that we did a long time ago in some of our previous lives.
The April Fool's joke. Yeah.
Yes.
Which we did. We actually claimed that we developed technology that can detect hacker, all the bad guys, simply by, you know, recording your photo the way you look like. And so this is a counter that, yeah.
It was whether you wore a baseball cap. Baseball cap or something like that, or if you had facial hair like Vanya does, must
Let's
be a bad
link. We'll put a link
facial
in
hair
we'll
was almost instantly unrecognizable.
Yeah, we'll put a link in so people can see it because that's ages old, but that's great fun. Now, let me just finish this because there's some great stuff here. So, this guy has done other projects, one called Camouflash, which would be a purse with an electronic device that reacts to a camera's flash. So with light, so when the light hits, it basically shines back and it makes your face look like a halo of light. It's like a halo of light. So it's all kind of stealth wear. He has anti-drone scarves meant to be worn over your head, and it kind of subverts thermal vision surveillance for military drones. So it's useful fashion.
So you either flash somebody or just hit them in the face. That's what they would do in Croatia.
That's right. I don't know if you noticed this, but we just lost Graham.
Oh, Graham.
Yeah, No one noticed. No one noticed. You're back.
I'm back.
Anyway.
Is it a dog issue?
It wasn't that I was bored, Crow. It wasn't that I was bored. it was my dog. So I had to disobey. For those people just listening, not seeing the pictures, I had to go to the front door because the dog was going, wanted to get out. Yeah, but it's all right now. Anyway, what my question is this: why wouldn't someone just wear a balaclava or a wide brimmed hat or some spangly sunglasses?
I think they do. I think this guy is giving, you know, he's an artist. He's also commenting on it, but he's also raising the issue of, look, privacy is something that I don't think we take for granted today. I think we're fighting tooth and nail, many of us, to try and keep a hold of some level of privacy because somehow it feels like a human right to me anyway. But I don't know if the next generations are going to feel the same. If they're just going to be able, you know, for convenience sake of having a phone or having a smartwatch or having all these gadgets, are we giving up something much more precious? Well, and I think that's what he's bringing to the fore, right? That's what he's bringing us to discuss and to think about, which is good.
Well, there are many people actually thinking about privacy, but I'm afraid this is a losing battle because most of the people really like their convenience of having a phone, having the information, posting it anywhere, posting it on Facebook. They don't really care or they don't really mind that this information is actually collected and it's used for commercial and any it's potentially for any other kind of surveillance type purposes. Mm-hmm. So. I don't know. There will always be people who will be very privacy conscious, and they'll be, let's say, protected, or at least they'll think they're protected. but majority of people will be kind of exposed to, what we have now.
We're all around the same age, but you remember when the door closed when we were kids, right? It was like utter privacy in the house, right? There was no way, unless someone had a camera and they'd maybe get it developed a month later, there didn't be any evidence of it. And now we all have cameras everywhere and voice recorders, and we put them in our homes liberally. We don't even have a room for it.
Some people are even streaming their podcast chats live on YouTube. How insane is that? And then the dog wants to get out the front door. Nuts, what we're revealing here. You'd never have noticed if you hadn't been watching. We are just about running out of time. Very quickly, let's have some feedback on last week's show. It was our first ever episode, and we were talking about the challenge of providing technical support to our friends and families over the holiday season and managing elderly relatives' passwords. Thanks to everybody who gave us some feedback on the show. We're glad some of you enjoyed it anyway, including Juliet Spensley, who sent a message saying, hilarious, absolute comedy gold, please post more. I don't know what on earth she was watching. She must have been watching some... Jimmy Kimmel or something like that rather than us. But she carries on to say, I share your sentiments about your elderly parents and in-laws. My mum is 80 and she wants an iPad. And I actually think that's a really sensible type of computer to get an elderly parent. Not too much tech support and no real risk of getting any malware on it.
Even my mother-in-law has an iPad and she knows how to use it. So it's pretty good.
Well, yeah, Juliet's mum wants to FaceTime her mother in Australia, who is 104. So well done, Australian mum, grandmum over there. That's very impressive.
Indeed.
Who else have we got in the list?
And then we have David Lavec, who wrote more about security of the passwords. And he says, I both write down passwords and finally install KeePass2 for Android, which is free and open source. So this is like both the physical security and sort of and digital security. And it could be actually, having the best to have both. I don't know. There are a few other people who also commented on the same idea of actually writing down the password, and this is actually bad.
It's not necessarily bad, but there are challenges involved, and that's one thing to remember, because if you are, for instance, away from your home and you need your password, or you're away working, then having them written down in a book back home is no use at all, is it? It's handier if you can access them on your computer in some ways, and there's a risk, of course, if you do take your password book with you, that it might get stolen. So, horses for courses. But most important thing, have secure passwords, make them unique. And that's what people need to do. Well, we're about to wrap up. Very quickly, who had the least tedious story this week? Me?
Carol.
Me?
Maybe the listeners should decide, not us.
Oh, that's a good idea. Right? Maybe they could leave a comment.
Yeah, say, Carol, that was a very amazing story.
Right.
Well done, Carol.
All right. Okay. We'll find out next week who was the best, maybe.
Isn't that what they do on the X Factor shows? Come on.
Yeah. Yes. Well, that just about wraps it up. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in and the kind words and even the grumpy words as well. We appreciate all of them. If you've got any thoughts, things that you think we should be talking about, get in touch with us. Our Twitter is @SmashingSecurity. That's smashing without a G, security. Until next time, cheerio. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.